Nationalism, not globalism, will be our credo. It's going to be only America first. America first. The American people will come first once again.
Good evening, everybody. You're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back here with you tonight on Tuesday. We have a lot to talk about tonight, lots to get into, big show, and some very sad news, very tragic news. But a major update in the Gaza war. It is day 11 of the conflict. And we had a pretty big show last night summarizing the events of the weekend and what happened yesterday. And we're going to have another big show tomorrow because President Joe Biden is currently on his way over there right now. He's on his way to Israel where he's supposed to have a major summit meeting with the Netanyahu government, the goal of which is to secure some form of humanitarian assistance to the trapped Palestinians in Gaza before the ground invasion. But we have another big show tonight. We have some major, major developments in the war tonight. I'm sure you've all heard the news, but today there was a massive attack on a hospital in Gaza, which killed 500 people. And it's apparent that it was Israel who is responsible, although both sides are blaming the other side. The Palestinians say that Israel did it, and that seems to be where the evidence is pointing. But Israel accuses the Palestinians of accidentally blowing up their own hospital because a rocket that they shot malfunctioned and fell on it. So we'll be talking all about that tonight. We'll talk about the evidence for and against, you know, who's responsible for it. We'll talk about the reaction from all the Arab Muslim countries, as well as Iran. Everybody's pissed. And there's massive protests underway across the region in Turkey, in Lebanon, in Jordan. And this has been condemned by every leader in the Middle East. We'll be talking about how this affects the upcoming trip from Biden in response to the attack on the hospital, a secondary meeting which was supposed to take place in the capital of Jordan between Biden, the Jordanian king, and the president of the Palestinian Authority has been canceled. So there'll be no diplomacy between Biden and the Palestinians this week. And we'll talk about what the motivation might be for Israel to attack the hospital, because like with anything of this nature, you have to ask yourself, who is the interested party? Who would be motivated to do this? Because the, you know, the forensic evidence is not clear. The actual real hard evidence we don't have access to. There's no video that shows an Israeli plane bombing it. Although there are other clues, which we'll get into, but I think as it happens with things like 9/11 or the initial Hamas attack, we have to ask ourselves, what would the possible motivation be? Who benefits? And that involves asking, what is the end game of all the parties involved? If we ask ourselves strategically who benefits from an attack like this, this also involves a very related question, which is, what does each party actually want to get out of the conflict? And that helps us to answer the first question. So we'll be talking about all that, a lot of developments. This has created another real wrinkle here. But as I've been saying for the last week, we really have to consider the possibility that this escalates into a world war. That's the number one concern. And that is fundamentally what's motivating all parties involved: Iran, the United States, Israel, Russia. And so this puts us on a further track towards World War III. And I actually wrote a little post out on Telegram this morning, and I said last night, and it was almost predictive, I said Israel's actions are, and maybe people didn't know what I meant by this, I'll just say this before we really get into it. I said last night that we are reaching a point of no return where we're not even able to control whether or not this conflict widens and escalates. I said last night that depending on the severity of Israel's attack in Gaza, Iran may not be able to restrain Hezbollah. Hezbollah may not be able to restrain Hezbollah. I said in other Arab countries in the region, they may be forced to intervene by their own people because there'd be a revolution if they didn't. I've been saying all this. I said that last week. I said it yesterday. I wrote it in my Telegram post. And I said this is part of a diplomatic revolution which seems to be rallying the whole Muslim world for the first time in 50 years against Israel and by proxy against the United States. It is all coming to pass. Certainly the bombing against the hospital, I think, can help everybody realize what that means and what that's going to look like, because this is just the beginning. Mark my words, this bombing of the hospital, like with the airstrikes and the blockade that's been going on for the past week, this is the beginning. This is a taste. This is a Whitman sampler, okay, of what we're about to get in Gaza if Israel commits to a full-scale invasion and a counterinsurgency, urban warfare in the streets. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be brutal. And you're going to see the same response from all the neighbors. It will intensify and multiply. So that's just a little preview. That's going to be our main story. If we have time, we'll get into the speakership. I told you yesterday I'd like to talk about it this week, but there's just so much going on in Gaza. I just don't know what day that's going to be. You know, we got the big summit tomorrow, so presumably we'll be talking all about the Gaza war again tomorrow. And the invasion may start later this week. So I don't know when we'll have a chance to get into it. If we have time tonight, we'll talk a little bit about it. But just in case you missed it, Jim Jordan was nominated by the Republicans, and it was put to a vote on the floor, and the vote failed. He did not become the speaker. So the House of Representatives, in the meantime, with all this going on, House of Representatives is still without a speaker, and there's no end to the process in sight. So far, there's no viable candidate, and actually, McCarthy's the most viable. Still, he's got more votes than anybody, and he's not running again. So, like I said, if we have time, we'll explore that a little more. And if not tonight, I'd like to get into it sometime this week. But as you can understand, the big situation is in Palestine. So we'll probably be talking about that all night tonight. So that's going to be our show. Before we get into it, I want to remind you to smash the follow button here on Cozy. Get a push notification whenever I go live, cozy.tv/Nick. And follow me on Rumble. I'm live every night on Rumble as well. You guys are loving the Rumble streams. Everybody's been loving this show and my coverage of the war. So I really appreciate all the new viewers and subscribers over on Rumble. A little bit of a different audience, I can tell just by looking at some of the comments. Yeah, everybody on Cozy is like a Nick Fuentes cultist. They're all like hardcore. We're all on the same page. But I could tell on Rumble it's a new audience because I look at some of the comments and they're like, I like this kid, but Pope Francis is the Antichrist. And, you know, just stuff like this. It is what it is. It's a little bit of an older crowd, it seems, but that's okay. We'll get there. We'll get all the boomers. We'll get all the boomers in the cult eventually. You just got to spend a little more time with the show. But anyway, make sure you follow me on both. Show's been doing amazing on Rumble. And I appreciate all the support I've been getting over there. So follow me on both and follow me on Telegram. The link is down below. I think that's all of our announcements. I have my pumpkin. Finally, I know it's super late. Usually, I have the pumpkin every year. Usually I get it for October, but things have just been crazy. So finally got the pumpkin. One more thing. Before we get into the news, I just want to throw one more thing out there. You know, last night was a great show, by the way. Everybody loved it. People said it was an instant classic. So it's going to be tough to live up to that. But, you know, last night we talked a little about Charlie Kirk and Alex Jones and Trump and how it seems that some of the goyish conservatives are maybe coming around. And I don't know if even coming around is the right way to say it. I'd say it's more like they're just frustrated. They're venting. But I want to talk a little bit tonight, just before we get into the latest developments in Gaza, about another post from Charlie Kirk, which I saw today. And I want to talk about it because this is a really important point. And I've been talking about this actually for several months. In the background of the Gaza war and in the background of the Ban the ADL campaign a few weeks ago, I've been talking consistently about this other narrative. This is very important. I saw this tweet from Charlie Kirk today, and he's not the only one. Many people are pointing out that there's this alliance between the American left and the Palestinians. And people have noted that there's this overlap, that the Palestinians talk about liberation against the Israelis. Similarly, the black people and the left in America talk about liberation against white people or against conservatives. And people pointed out that there's this superficial similarity in the rhetoric because they talk about decolonization and liberation, and it's the same words, and they tend to support one another. BLM supports the Palestinians, and those Muslim groups in America like CARE or politicians like Ilhan Omar, they support, in turn, BLM. But I've said from the beginning that this is really a forced dialectic. And if you pay attention, a lot of Jewish Zionists are making it a priority to show conservatives that BLM and Hamas are one and the same. If you follow some of these big Twitter accounts like Libs of TikTok or End Wokeness, both of these accounts are run by Zionist Jews. And other Zionist Jewish faces are saying the same thing. All these accounts are saying the same thing, which is that suddenly BLM and suddenly refugees and immigrants are a problem because they support Hamas. And I talked a little bit about this on Friday, that America has had this problem for decades. And it's really two problems. America and Western Europe, but specifically America, have had the problem of one, mass migration through illegal and legal means, through refugee programs, through the asylum process, through work visas. Some are just hopping the border. So that's one. One problem is the mass migration of people coming in. They're changing the demographics. They're bringing problems with them. They're causing a white genocide in white nations. And that's happening in all white countries in the world. That's problem one. And it's gone on since Hart-Celler. It's gone on since the Bush Immigration Act in 1990. It's been with us for a long time. And conservatives have always opposed immigration. Problem number two, which is really exclusively an American problem, is our very problematic black minority, which has been getting only more violent. They are emboldened and enabled by liberal Democrats who have taken over the judicial and law enforcement process in the major cities and states. And because of BLM and because of liberal prosecutors and attorneys general, you know that now all the major cities are up for grabs. And I guess there's really a third problem too, which is at the universities, which one way to look at a university is they are elite-making institutions. All the elites in law, banking, finance, government, they all come through the universities, and the universities are dominated by BLM, liberation, left-wing types. So these problems have been going on for a long time. I guess it's really three. It's immigration, it's this violent black minority in America, and it's the left-wing takeover of the universities. And for the longest time, we've really just permitted these things to go on. We've had Republican presidents, we've had Republican legislatures, states have had Republican governors, and yet we're soft on crime, we're soft on the border, soft on immigration, and I don't know that anybody's ever gone after these universities or their endowments. But now suddenly, and I pointed this out partly on Friday, suddenly, now that BLM and the immigrants and refugees and the liberals at the university support Hamas and Palestine, now we're going to move heaven and earth to destroy them. Now suddenly, BLM is a legitimate target. 3 years ago, a lot of conservatives were taking the knee right next to them. And for a long time, conservatives have been playing in even to the black victim narrative. And conservatives have said, we don't want an immigration moratorium. We want to staple green cards to diplomas. We want to permit anybody who wants to come legally. And they've been, I would say they've been critical of the universities. That's maybe the one area they've been good on. Point being is now when it's a problem for Israel, now when all these left-wing or belligerent non-white groups are supporting Israel's enemy, now we can do anything possible, anything in the government's power to rid our country of them. And as I said on Friday, that demonstrates where the real seat of power is. When these problems are afflicting white people, when they're eroding white society or the foundations of white society, like our heroes, holidays, religion, culture, it's never been a big problem. And if it is, it's never been an urgent problem. Nobody's screaming. Nobody's deporting people like they are in France and England right now. But suddenly they are. And that's because, again, the real seat of power clearly lies with organized Jewry as well as the state of Israel. That's why it's suddenly become a priority. That's why the gloves are off now in many cases. Now, going along with this is this narrative now, which you're hearing, which is that BLM and Palestine are the same. And I said this last week. Palestine says that the Israelis are colonizers and they need total liberation from them. And they say that BLM supports Palestine. And BLM employs the same rhetoric. They say they need to decolonize and liberate America against the white people. And I saw this tweet from Charlie Kirk today. He said that this is what's going on. He said that the left is anti-Jew, anti-white, and anti-West. Now, what's amazing is that for decades, you could never talk about how these groups are anti-white. You could never talk about that. Not until very recently. And I would know because I was at Charlottesville. And I was at Charlottesville and I wasn't there for the Tiki Torch, but the message of Charlottesville was that these Jewish elites would not replace white Americans through immigration from the third world. Now, back then, it was a Nazi rally. You were radioactive if you went. Now, I think a lot of people are getting closer to that message, although they don't necessarily understand the Jewish dimension of it. But anyway, back then, you know, like I said, I was there protesting against mass migration, replacement migration, which is going to genocide the white people wherever they reside. But back then, you couldn't say that. And when the Groypers initially went to the Turning Point events on the college campus in 2019, we were called white supremacists. We were called white nationalists for saying that America should have an immigration policy designed to protect the white majority. But again, now that Israel is under attack and these groups are supporting Israel's enemies, only now can we say that it's anti-white, and only in the same breath as we call it anti-Jewish. And it reminds me of this other word that we use, like Judeo-Christian. And here's the point. In America, our civilization is being destroyed in two ways. Our religion, which is Christianity, is under attack, and the race, which built Europe, and Europe, which colonized the world and built countries like the United States, Canada, and Australia, is also under attack. In 100 years, without any changes, all things being equal, with the loss of religion, with generations increasingly identifying as not having a religion or atheist, and as whites don't have children, and as non-white immigrants pour into the white countries replacing them, by the end of this century, there's going to be hardly any Christians, and there's going to be hardly any white people. But this has been the trend for generations. It's only now that we can talk about it, and it's only in the same breath that we talk about the same thing happening to the Jews that we could talk about it. In other words, we can't talk about a white genocide unless we're also talking about how the real problem with this is that Jews will be most affected by it. It can never just be anti-white. It has to be anti-white and anti-Jewish. Similarly, we can never talk about how Christianity is under attack. We can never talk about a Christian theocracy. We can never talk about a Christian government or Christian laws. We can only talk about a Judeo-Christian tradition, a Judeo-Christian value system. And so my point tonight is that we need to decouple these things, and we need to realize that that's a false dialectic. The dialectic is not the Judeo-Christians, the Jews and the whites versus the non-whites of the world, versus the black people and the Palestinians and the Muslims and the Russians and the Chinese. That is a false dialectic. And it's a false dialectic because guess what? Jews and Christians don't share the same values. And what's more, Jews and white people do not share the same interest. And we know this because when you look at the modern left on the universities, It was created by Jews. When we talk about cultural Marxists, when we talk about the Frankfurt School, where did they all come from? Where did they all flee from and why? And what are their last names? Now, some of them are French and some of them are something else, but most of them are Jewish. And when we talk about the neocons, when we talk about the neocons that took over the GOP and sent us to war in Iraq, which we talked about a few weeks ago, has been so catastrophic for the United States. I think on the anniversary of 9/11, I did a big show and said, when you bookend it with the Iraq war and the Ukraine war, you see how the Iraq war was the beginning of the end for Western civilization in some ways. Who were the neocons? What were their last names? Where do they come from? Where does their tradition come from? Would you guess that these neocons became foreign policy hawks? Because in 1973, it was the Soviet Union that backed the Arabs in a surprise attack on Israel. And you see how it's all connected? And so the point being is to say that the Jews and the white people, or the Jews and the Christians, are one side of a dialectic. They're one side of two poles in a conversation against the commies and against the global South and against the Palestinians is wrong. You cannot consider either the religious Jews or the non-religious Jews, you can't consider them as on the same side as the white people and the Christians, because Jews so often work against the interest of whites and Christians, and they have for generations. And you know, Carl Schmitt popularized this concept. He said that the essence of politics is the us versus them distinction. He said that the most important thing in politics is to determine who's on our side and who we're fighting. He said that that dichotomy defines politics. And he said, and I don't know the exact quote, but he said that nothing is more dangerous than to consider a group that should be on the other side as one of your own. But that's exactly what we've been doing when we speak of these things like Judeo-Christianity, and when we speak of these things like an anti-Jewish / anti-white sentiment. Because we see that only when Israel needs our money, only when Israel needs white conservatives to hate Hamas as much as they hate BLM, it's only then that we are empowered to expel refugees from our country. It's only then that we can get really intense about how we want to approach problems like BLM. When it's a regular day, when it's just the last 30 years, it was Jewish people in the conservative movement. It was Jewish people who were left-wing on the universities. It was the ADL that was browbeating us about having a white identity, about turning away non-white immigrants because of its demographic effect. The ADL, 3 weeks ago, was saying that it's white nationalists and they're counting down the days until it's a white minority, and we need liberal internationalism to bring the white core to heal in America. 3 weeks later, they got Palestinians fired from MSNBC because they said that they're not sufficiently pro-Israel. And so you understand how the Jewish people only care about anti-white, they only care about anti-Christian when they need the whites and Christians to support them. But when we need them to fight anti-white or anti-Christianity any other day of the week, they're on the other team. They're the ones out there like Ben Shapiro saying, "I don't give a damn about the browning of America." That was years ago, before Israel needed us to go to war for them. And these other people who have called me for years a white nationalist, a white supremacist, a hateful person, all those years, I was a horrible person. But now that the non-white refugees that we brought in are waving Palestinian flags in New York City, now they want them all out. And they say, "Hey, come on, these guys are anti-white and anti-Jewish. What do you say we work together and get them out of here?" Excuse me, where have you been for the last 30 years? They were supporting the wars that caused them to come here in the first place, like in Syria and Iraq and Yemen and Afghanistan. So I don't want to hear about anti-Jew, anti-white, anti-West, because it only ever seems to be we're all on the same side when Israel's under attack. When Israel's not under attack, it's every white person for themselves. And if you go too far, you call the white supremacist neo-Nazi. Another Holocaust. If this guy gets ahead, shut it down. So that's a false dialectic. And we have to keep in mind that it has been an unholy alliance between Jews and these refugees. Before all this with Israel, it was them working together against white people. And maybe you remember last year when Kanye West talked about Jews running the media. Do you remember the overtures that the Jews made to the black people and said, we have been together for years. The Jews supported the civil rights movement because we've both been treated with hate and discrimination and prejudice by the white majority in America. And it's true, they were. But now they want to come and sidle up next to us and be our best good friend and say, get them! Get those black people that we support in the civil rights movement, they support Hamas. Get them! Now they got to go. Really? So we need to keep in mind that it's whites and it's Christians. Our Jewish elite in this country has not been friendly to our white majority. And to the extent that they have Jewish religious values or atheistic values, which in some sense proceed from Judaism, they're contrary to Christian values too. You know, Ben Shapiro is talking about how Jesus Christ was a Roman that got killed for his trouble. But again, when Israel's under attack, hey, we're all on the same side against radical Islam. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so this time. So anyway, I just wanted to, I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I wanted to bring that up because I've been saying this for a long time. These Zionists and other Jewish types, they always want to stand next to the white man or the Christians when they need us to go and fight their wars. And once we go and fight their wars and the threat is abated, then the Jews carry on undermining the white Christian civilization because they are the ones that are in all these elite positions. And that tends to be the problem. Look no further than the conservative media. These guys like Shapiro, Prager, Charlie Kirk himself, they have been gatekeepers against any kind of pro-white consciousness for years. But all of a sudden, when Hamas attacks, now we'll speak of these things like an anti-white, anti-Jewish left? I don't think so. Where were you when it mattered? Where were you when Donald Trump was running in 16? Or where were you when Pat Buchanan was running for that matter? They were calling him an anti-Semite. That's where they were. So these things are, of course, related. But anyway, that's that. I want to move on. I want to get into the developments from today. It's day 11 of the Israel-Palestine conflict in Gaza. And the big development today is that a hospital was bombed in Gaza, killing over 500 people. And it looks as though Israel is responsible. In fact, no other country really could be responsible, given some of the video evidence of the strike. And we'll get into that. But Palestine has blamed Israel. Israel has blamed Palestine, although it seems that that's just a reflexive move. The whole world attributes the attack to Israel. And so I'll read this. This is a news story from the New York Times about the attack. It says, quote, an explosion killed hundreds of people on Tuesday at a hospital in Gaza City that was packed with people sheltering there as Palestinians and Israelis blamed each other for a tragedy that inflamed the region just as President Biden was expected to arrive in Israel. Hamas, the group that controls Gaza, said an Israeli airstrike had caused the blast at the Ali Arab Hospital. Hours later, Israeli officials said that one of the rockets fired at Israel by Palestine had failed shortly after launch, causing what could be the deadliest single incident of the 10-day war. The Israeli military and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Tuesday that the blast at the hospital resulted from a failed rocket launch by Islamic Jihad, a group allied with Hamas. Islamic Jihad denied the allegation. A spokeswoman for the Gazan Health Ministry put the toll at 500 or more 500 or more dead, although the ministry later changed that to hundreds. No figure could be confirmed independently, but images from the hospital, which is run by the Anglican Church, and witness accounts made clear that it was very high. Israeli planes have been pummeling Gaza in retaliation for Hamas's October 7th massacre and kidnapping of Israelis. The bombing campaign and Israel's directive to evacuate North Gaza, including Gaza City, have displaced hundreds of thousands of people, killed or wounded thousands, and left people throughout the territory perilously low on water, food, fuel, and medicine. People who fled their homes were sleeping in the streets. Fights were breaking out over food. Hospitals were increasingly unable to care for a flood of wounded patients. More than a week of international talks have yielded no agreement to allow vital supplies into the territory, to let some people exit, or to create safe zones for civilians within Gaza, where more than 2 million people are trapped in worsening conditions. So that paints a picture of what's going on. In case you've not been watching, this is the situation. Palestine is home to 2.1 million people. They have been blockaded by Israel for 10 days, meaning no food, no water, no fuel, or medicine has gone in at all. The Gaza Strip, there's only three checkpoints in and out, and two of them are controlled by Israel, which have been closed, and one, the Rafah crossing, is controlled by Egypt, but that has been continuously bombed by Israel. So it's 2.1 million people trapped in this territory. All the checkpoints are closed. People can't enter. People can't leave. Most of the electricity and water and food comes through the Israeli checkpoints, and Israel's not permitting any of that to go in. So no food, water, medicine, fuel has gone into Gaza in over a week. At the same time, this would already be bad. At the same time, on Thursday, Israel ordered the 1.1 million residents of North Gaza to evacuate. 1.1 million people. It's a very tiny territory, and they've ordered 1.1 million in the northern half to flee. Where they're going to flee, nobody knows, because it's totally blockaded and no one's allowed to leave. So 1.1 million in the midst of this blockade, in the midst of everything that's going on, they're being forced to walk or ride donkeys or on the hoods of cars south in an already densely populated area. So they're pushing all 2 million people in just the southern half. At the same time that this is going on, they're dropping bombs on them. They're bombing the people evacuating. They're bombing schools, mosques, hospitals, ambulances. And the latest today is that they bombed a hospital where the wounded and other displaced people were camping out. So not only were they treating the sick and the wounded, but also refugees were being housed there. So this is the situation. This is just like probably the worst place on earth. And as I've been stressing for the last week, this is collective punishment. These people, this is all deliberate. This is all intentional by Israel. 3,000 Hamas militants invaded Israel. They killed 1,600 people, and it was a horrible tragedy. And there should be a response from Israel. But what Israel has undertaken is vengeance. They took that terrorist attack, and they have used it as an excuse to put Gaza under siege. And not just the military. We're not talking about they let civilians leave so they could attack the military or something. They have trapped all the people of Gaza in this place. They have made 500,000 of them homeless, which is a quarter of the entire population. And they'll have no home to return to because they've bombed all the infrastructure where they fled from. And the people that are attempting to leave, they're killing them indiscriminately from the air. And then the people that are being put up in hospitals for treatment or for shelter, they're now killing them. And so, like I said, the latest report today is that this hospital was bombed and 500 died. And both sides blame each other. There's this curious problem where Gaza's been bombed for 10 days. A hospital gets bombed, And the Israelis said, oh, they did it. You know, the Palestinians did it. And it's incredible because there has been wall-to-wall shilling on social media and in the news that perhaps Palestine was in fact responsible. It's incredible. Understand that Israel has been bombing Palestine every day for over a week in retaliation. They've been bombing hospitals. They've been bombing schools and bombing mosques. And they've said alternatively, on the one hand, they say, well, if we bomb a school, that's because Hamas was using the school as a human shield. So we can do that. You know, so on the one hand, they try to justify attacking civilian infrastructure by saying that in reality, it's military infrastructure disguised as civilian infrastructure. So if they kill civilians, if they blow up a school, well, it was the fault of Hamas for putting their base there. On the one hand, they'll say that. On the other hand, the president of Israel has said that every Palestinian in Gaza is responsible, and so they'll all be punished for it. And Israeli legislators have said that the Palestinians are human animals. They deserve to be killed. So which is it? You know, but either way, they've been bombing civilian infrastructure and civilians. They've been killing innocent people all week. And on the one hand, they say, well, we have to do that because those people are in the way of Hamas. So it's really, even though no one likes killing civilians, it's really the fault of Hamas because they put them in harm's way. On the other hand, they're saying we don't care. We're going to kill civilians because they're animals and they're all responsible. They might as well all be Hamas. So either way, they're bombing civilians. And they, on the one hand, they'll make an excuse. On the other hand, they say, you know what? We just want to kill them all. Today, a hospital is bombed. It's the deadliest incident in the war. And Israel says, oh, well, you know, we've been bombing hospitals all week. And, you know, sometimes we make excuses. Sometimes we just own it and say we're murdering them. But it wasn't us today. Today, it was their own side. Their own side accidentally blew up their own hospital. We bombed 70 schools, which is a real number, by the way. They've bombed 70 schools. And we bombed ambulances, you know, but this one we didn't do. This time it was them, and they did it on accident. But there's just one problem. We have video of the strike. And if you pay attention to the video, it sounds as though whatever type of munition was used entered Mach 1, which produces a certain sound, which sounds exactly like American-supplied JDAM missiles. And if you listen to a video comparison, which is all over Twitter, they sound exactly the same. So the missile that hit the hospital sounds just like all the other American missiles that are hitting all the other hospitals that Israel is sending. What a coincidence. Additionally, all the Palestinian rockets that have been launched do not destroy entire buildings. If you look at any of the damage on the Israeli side or any of the missiles that Hamas has used in the past, these are not serious munitions. They don't have that kind of velocity, and they don't have that kind of ordnance. They're not blowing up entire buildings. No Palestinian rocket launched by Hamas has ever destroyed a building. It just hasn't happened. They'll do damage, but they don't level a building like this. That's advanced, sophisticated rocketry that Israel is responsible for. And then the Israelis go out and they say, well, it was a munitions depot, that it was ammunition that Palestine was storing there and it all exploded. And that's how we can account for the fact that the Palestinian rockets don't have that kind of explosive power. The problem with this is that if it was ammunition, it would take minutes to explode. If it was ammunition that was blowing up like a fireworks factory, it would take minutes to unfold. The strike on the hospital was over in 1 second. So it was obviously a missile, just based on the evidence that we've seen, the video, the level of destruction, how the explosion was detonated. It's clear, and based on all the evidence that it's been a week of Israel bombing hospitals, it was obviously Israel. And so the response from the Arab world is outrage. And I, by the way, the significance of this, like I said yesterday and last week, is that the more severe and brutal Israel's war against Gaza becomes, this will anger Muslims across the entire Muslim world. Right now, there is this factional dispute in the Middle East between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And so Iran backs Syria and Hezbollah, and it backs Shiite militias in Iraq, and it backs Houthi rebels in Yemen, and Saudi Arabia supports the Iraqi government, and Saudi Arabia supports the rebels in Syria, and Saudi Arabia supports the government in Yemen, and so on and so forth. The point is, there's a lot of disagreement in the Muslim world. And that is a staging ground for a wider proxy conflict between the United States and China. Iran and Syria are allies of Russia and China, and Saudi Arabia and Israel are allies of the United States. But as I said yesterday and Friday, the more severe and brutal Israel is in their war in Gaza, this will rally Muslims everywhere. It doesn't matter that Egypt signed the Camp David Accords. It doesn't matter that Jordan's at peace with Israel. It doesn't matter that 2 weeks ago, Saudi Arabia was ready to normalize ties with Israel. No Muslims like to see Israel slaughtering Palestinian civilians. And so, and I said, Muslims across the entire region are going to be outraged. And in countries that are friendly, it's going to turn them against Israel. And in countries that are already against Israel, it's going to force these militias to attack Israel and widen the conflict. So I'll elaborate on that further in a moment, but this is an article from New York Times about the response to this bombing of the hospital. It says, quote, "The catastrophe drew heated reactions from Egypt and Jordan, which are two Arab governments that made peace with Israel decades ago, as well as from others with whom Israel's relations were just starting to warm, including Saudi Arabia. King Abdullah II of Jordan called the explosion a heinous crime that cannot be ignored and declared a 3-day mourning period in his country for those killed. President Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority said he was returning from Jordan to the West Bank on Tuesday, and Jordan had canceled a planned meeting of regional leaders at which U.S. President Biden had been set to meet with Mr. Abbas. Mr. Biden is now skipping the stop in Jordan. The Saudi government said in a statement on Tuesday night that Israel was responsible for the death at the hospital and a, quote, flagrant violation of all international laws and norms, which is an accusation repeated by many Arab governments. Among them was Egypt, which issued a statement demanding that Israel immediately cease its collective punishment policies against the people of the Gaza Strip. And so this is a very precarious situation now. Prior to the war breaking out, as we've talked about over the past couple of weeks, there was a changing paradigm in the Middle East. And if you haven't been following the show, if you don't know all the background, at the end of the day, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is about integrating the Israeli state into the Middle East. In 1948, Israel declares independence, and they force all of the Palestinians that live in Israel out of the country as refugees. And they go into the Gaza Strip, they go into the West Bank, into Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, as refugees. And they call this the Nakba, or the catastrophe. This is like the original sin of Israel, is to declare their independence, force everybody out. And ever since then, all the Muslim countries have hated Israel. And four times, from 1948 to 1973, a coalition of Arab Muslim countries have gone to war with Israel to wipe it off the map. In 1948, when they declared independence, in 1956, during the Suez Canal crisis, in 1967, during the Six-Day War, and in 1973, during the Yom Kippur War. All four wars, Israel won, and Israel gradually got stronger in every single war. In 1948, the United Nations came in and forced a ceasefire on both sides, and in the meantime, Israel armed itself and was able to drive the Arabs out. After 1967, Israel acquired a nuclear arsenal. After 1973, Israel basically got full-fledged security guarantee from the United States. And it gets to the point in the 1970s where the Arabs realize they're never going to defeat Israel militarily. They can't win. And so in 1978, Israel makes a peace deal with Egypt, which was huge because Egypt was the most powerful country that was leading the charge against Israel in all those wars. So in 1978, first Muslim country, aside from Turkey, Egypt normalizes its relationship with Israel and makes peace with them and establishes a diplomatic relation. 20 years later, in 1994, Israel makes peace with its other neighbor, Jordan, across the Jordan River. Under Donald Trump, Israel began to make peace with other Arab countries under the Abraham Accords framework. And so they normalized ties with the United Arab Emirates, with Bahrain, which are two Gulf countries, with Morocco, and began the process with Sudan. Under Biden last week, Israel was about to normalize ties with Saudi Arabia. And this was key because what was being created here was a Middle East where Israel was effectively integrated. There was a scenario just 2 weeks ago where Israel would establish a normal diplomatic relationship with virtually all of its Muslim neighbors without resolving the Palestinian dispute. And so this would thread the needle where Israel could have a normal relationship with all these countries without necessarily having to solve the Palestinian issue, which is intractable and has been the impasse which has prevented Israel from integrating into the region. That was really the brilliance of the Abraham Accords, is it sidestepped an impossible conflict and said that the Muslim world would accept Israel without necessarily having to accept Israel's treatment of the Palestinians. And what this would do is at the same time create a bifurcation in the Middle East where you had a coalition backed by the United States, which would consist of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries, Jordan, and Israel. And naturally, they would be set against Iran, Syria, and their patrons, China and Russia. And so we would have a Middle East that was split of countries that recognize Israel and are allied with the United States, and countries that remain hostile towards Israel and are allied with China and Russia. But this has been a 50-year process. It started with the Camp David Accords. That was Egypt. It was Jordan in 94. And this new framework, the Abraham Accords, which brings in Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states, was just in the past few years. And it was about to be finished under Biden. And this would, again, bifurcate the Middle East and draw a new sort of Cold War line between America's allies recognizing Israel and the continued adversaries of Israel backed by the others. What the bombing of the hospital does is twofold. One, it unites all the Muslims against Israel. And so, although we had been working on this deal to have Saudi Arabia recognize Israel, at the same time, China has been brokering a new diplomatic relationship between Iran and Saudi Arabia. They've been in a Cold War for 45 years, ever since the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979. Saudi Arabia and Iran have been fighting each other, and in the last 10 years, this has consumed the entire Middle East. They've been fighting each other in virtually every country. And at the same time that Biden was working out a deal to bring Saudi Arabia into the orbit of the United States and to normalize ties with Israel, at the same time, there was this warming of ties between old Muslim adversaries who couldn't have been more at odds, Iran and Saudi Arabia. And so one thing that the bombing of the hospital does is it drives adversaries like Saudi Arabia and Iran together. And it brings pretty much the whole Muslim world. Countries that have been friendly to Israel, like Egypt and Jordan, are condemning them. Turkey is condemning Israel. And it's creating a scenario, it looks increasingly likely, where perhaps Turkey, Egypt, Iran and Saudi Arabia may all be on the same side against Israel, which has never happened ever. There's never been that level of Muslim unity since, like, the fall of the Ottoman Empire. It's never happened before. So one, it unites the entire Muslim world together. And this Cold War that's going on, where the United States and Israel have allies, all that goodwill, all that diplomacy that has taken decades to build up, it is disappearing every time Israel does something like this. So that's number one. Number two, of course, on the flip side of that, not only is the Muslim world united together against Israel, but they're also united against the United States. Because, as we've discussed, the United States has deployed two aircraft carriers in the Eastern Mediterranean to make it so that Iran cannot pressure Israel with the threat of an attack. Because perhaps Israel may not be so brutal and severe in their retaliation against Hamas if there was a reasonable fear that Iran may attack Israel. But if the United States is deployed in the region, then it checks Iran and it checks that pressure and it allows Israel to do whatever it wants. It lets Israel bomb hospitals. They don't need to be afraid of Iran because Iran is afraid of the United States, which is now in the neighborhood. So the Muslim world doesn't just hold Israel responsible, but they also hold the United States responsible. And so now not only can Saudi Arabia not normalize ties with Israel, and not only are they now friendly with Iran because they both have in common that they hate Israel, but also it makes it more likely that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the Emirates, and Turkey fall into the sphere of influence of Russia and China. Because Russia and China support the two-state solution. Russia and China support Palestine being granted statehood, and they oppose the humanitarian disaster that's going on. So it's uniting all the Muslims together, which is unprecedented, and it's also uniting them against America and uniting them with our adversaries, Russia and China. And think about how that reshapes the geopolitical landscape, where by the end of this conflict, perhaps the United States is antagonistic towards Russia, China, and all the Muslim countries. This is where we are in 2023. All the blood shed by the United States, all the money spent, decades of soft and hard power of diplomacy, and at the end of it, we are at war with Russia and China and all Muslim countries in the world. Because no Muslim country is going to want to be allied with the United States if they're guaranteeing that Israel can kill Muslim civilians in hospitals. It just doesn't work like that. And I've been calling it, it's a diplomatic revolution. Diplomatic revolution means all the old alliances, all the old coalitions have radically changed. This is what's been happening since Russia-Ukraine, and Israel's attack on Gaza is doing that now because it's rallying all of them together. The other aspect of the attack on the hospital is this. We've also talked about the fact that the biggest risk in the Israel-Palestine conflict is that the conflict will widen and escalate. Right now, it's a local conflict, which is really not a big deal. Hamas is not a big deal, and although Israel invading Gaza will be very logistically difficult and very technically challenging, it's not actually a big deal. Hamas is not an existential threat to Israel. But of course, now that Israel is bombing civilians, Iran is threatening that they will get involved. Iran is threatening that they will mobilize the axis of resistance, which constitutes Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Assad regime in Syria, Shiite militias in Iraq, Houthi rebels in Yemen, and they will all be mobilized to attack Israel if Israel is too brutal in the attack on Gaza. So that's the conflict widening. The United States is now there with its two aircraft carriers and 2,000 Marines to deter Iran from attacking Israel. And that should, in all things being equal, in a vacuum, that should make it so that Iran cannot attack Israel. You know, and it's like a game of chess. Iran puts Israel in check, so Israel can't kill Palestinians, because Iran might attack Israel with all its hundreds of thousands of militias across the region. But the United States being there puts Iran in check, because Iran can't attack Israel if the United States has 100 planes on two aircraft carriers right off the coast. The problem is that perhaps Iran and Hezbollah cannot help their fighters attacking Israel. And perhaps other countries can't either. And what I mean by that is, if Israel is blowing up hospitals and killing hundreds of wounded civilians, you can clearly imagine a scenario where Hezbollah will attack Israel in spite of the American presence in the region. If Iran is saying that they will intervene if Israel inflicts too many civilian casualties, you could see a scenario where these Iranian militias get tired of waiting, where they have to intervene despite America being there and retaliating. So maybe Hezbollah is not even able to restrain its own fighters. Maybe Iran is not even able to restrain itself because the people in Iran are revolting. And that's part of the backlash against the hospital being blown up, is that there have been massive demonstrations outside of an American military base in Turkey, outside the American embassy in Beirut, outside the American embassy in Jordan. And so if the people in all these countries are revolting, if they're rioting, if they're blowing up embassies because Israel is so brutal in its attack on Gaza, then maybe Iran can't control its own people and they attack Israel in spite of the guaranteed retaliation by the United States. And that gets to my question, which I asked at the beginning of the show. If we want to assess who is responsible for the bombing of the hospital, outside of the hard evidence, we have to ask who benefits. And the question of who benefits is tied up in what is the end game of all the players involved. And just like we talked about 10 days ago, the fact that Hamas attack on Israel curiously benefits Israel, an attack on Israel by Hezbollah also benefits Israel. Because what is Israel's endgame? We don't even have to speculate. They tell us all the time, and they've told us for decades. In the 1980s, under Israeli Prime Minister Oded Yonan, they drafted a grand strategy for their country. And since the 1980s, it has been the Jewish maximalists, it's been the very aggressive Likud politicians that have been in charge, basically uninterrupted for 40 years with some exceptions. Point is, they've had this plan in place. It's the same people have been running this country that drafted this plan. And the grand strategy for the Middle East that was authored in the 1980s said this. It said that their goal, in order that Israel should never be challenged by a strong Arab state or a coalition of Arab states, their goal is to destroy all of the powerful Arab countries. And the word that they use, or the phrase that they use, is they want to destroy the Arab states such that the Middle East becomes a mosaic of tribes with flags. That's the phrase they use, a mosaic of tribes with flags. And so the idea is that in 48, 56, 67, and 73, Israel was threatened by strong Arab nationalist or Islamist countries, powerful governments with big militaries that formed coalitions and attacked Israel. So Israel said, after they had finally defeated them in 73, they said, well, then there can be no powerful Arab states. There can be no powerful Muslim states. We will destroy all the big states, and what will remain in its place are these little fiefdoms, these little tribes with flags, these guys that don't really have big militaries. They don't command a large territory. The Middle East will be a mosaic. Rather than large territories governed by powerful states with big militaries, it'll be a mosaic of tiny little tribes. And then none of them can gather together and oppose Israel. None of them could concentrate enough power or organize to fight Israel on a collective basis. Tribes with flags. In 1996, they published the Clean Break memo on behalf of the Israeli government, which was written by a lot of the neocons in the Bush administration. And they said specifically they have a problem on their northern border. On their southern border, they have Egypt, which they have peace with. On their eastern border, they have Jordan, which they made peace with in 1994. But on their northern border, in southern Lebanon, is Hezbollah, which is a very powerful Shiite militia, which is funded by Iran. And Hezbollah is supplied by supply lines that go through Syria, which is controlled by Assad, an ally of Iran. And it goes into Iran, which is the mortal enemy of Israel. And Iraq is allied with Syria, and Iraq also poses a problem. So Israel said, in order to secure our northern border, this is in the Clean Break paper in 96, they said we have to topple Saddam Hussein, we have to degrade Syria, and we have to have regime change in Iran. Only then can they disrupt this supply line into Hezbollah. Only then can Israel truly be safe from its powerful neighboring adversaries. And that's exactly what's happened. Libya was taken out. Iraq was taken out by the United States. We tried to take out Assad, although the United States and Israel were unsuccessful. Russia intervened and saved Assad. But nevertheless, Assad has been greatly diminished by this civil war that has been going on for over 10 years. And the crown jewel, what they've wanted all this time, is to topple Iran. That's why every year they go to the United Nations General Assembly. That's why they publish these videos constantly. And they hysterically talk about how Iran is 1 year away from a nuclear bomb. They've been saying it for 20 years. That's why they had Trump tear up the Iran nuclear deal. That's why Israel assassinates Iranian scientists and attacks their centrifuges. The crown jewel that Israel wants is to destroy Iran, because they see destroying Iran as essential to their peace and safety in the region. They don't want Iran to develop a nuclear arsenal. They don't like Iran having a powerful conventional military. They don't like Iran supplying Hezbollah through Syria. And so the motivation truly of this Likud regime and Netanyahu and of Israel is to destroy Iran. So once again, the question is, what is the end game of the parties involved? Israel's end game, contrary to what might seem intuitive, it is not to destroy Hamas. In fact, they like Hamas. 10 days ago, Hamas invaded Israel, and it gave Israel a crisis that they could utilize to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip. And that's what they're doing. Hamas attacked Israel, and Israel is using this atrocity to rally the United States and to suppress its opponents so that they could go in, defeat Hamas, and probably annex or ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip, which is what they want. At the same time, what they've wanted for decades is to destroy Iran. Now, if they bomb the hospital in Palestine, it incites Muslims across the world. From Turkey to Indonesia, Muslims are outraged by this. They're burning the embassy. They're protesting outside the military base. And it just might force the hand of Hezbollah or Iran to attack Israel. If people in Jordan are burning down the embassy, Hezbollah has just, they want to attack Israel for this. So let's say Hezbollah attacks Israel. Israel, just like when Hamas attacked Israel last week, if Hezbollah attacks Israel today or tomorrow, now Israel has an excuse. Just like then, Israel has a pretext not just to strike Hezbollah, but also Iran, which is supplying them, and Syria, which is the territory through which Iran is supplying them. And if Israel attacks Iran and attacks Syria, then that draws the United States into a war between Israel and Iran. It forces the United States potentially into a regime change war against Iran. Israel attacking Hezbollah, attacking Iran, and then Iran retaliating means that now the United States is dragged into a war with Iran. And there's really no way that this can end for the United States other than that Iran, or the regime that controls Iran, is removed from power. That's why I asked the question, what's their end game? Because that tells us what they want and allows us to answer the question, who benefits? Who benefits from Israel blowing up the hospital? Israel. Because Israel blowing up the hospital pisses off the Muslims. It forces the Muslims to attack Israel, and it allows Israel to attack Iran, which creates an interstate conflict that the United States has to intervene in and can end in no other way other than regime change in Iran. That's what they want. And Netanyahu, as we talked about last week, 50%+ of Israelis say that he should step down when this crisis is over. So it's in his interest for this crisis to go on as long as possible. More than 80% of Israelis blame him for the initial attack from Hamas. What's more, Netanyahu is under investigation by the justice system for corruption. So if this crisis ends, and if Netanyahu is then forced out of power, he will go to jail. So it's not just in the Likud party or Israel's interest to topple Iran. It's also in Netanyahu's interest, who's the prime minister, for this crisis to be as long and drawn out and wide and intense as possible, because all that does for him is defer his removal from power and imprisonment. And that's what we're looking at. And let's entertain a scenario where the United States is at war with Iran. Let's say, because it's looking increasingly likely, if you've been paying attention, the Iranian foreign minister just went on a tour. He went to Lebanon and met with Hezbollah. He went to Damascus and met with Assad. He went to Iraq and met with the militias there. And what the Iranian foreign minister has said is that if there are too many civilian casualties, Iran will attack Israel through its proxies. So what does Israel do? They blow up a hospital. So let's say Hezbollah goes in, Israel attacks Iran, Iran attacks Israel. Now the United States is involved. And I want you to think about the global chessboard here. If Israel is attacked, the United States has to intervene to save Israel. Israel has a security guarantee as good as Germany or France or Italy or any of these other countries. They've basically got it. So the United States has to go to war with Iran. What happens next? Well, Iran is just like Syria, is allied with Russia and China. When the United States and Saudi Arabia and Israel backed rebels against the Assad regime in a proxy war, in an attempt to overthrow the Assad regime, Russia intervened. They did airstrikes against ISIS. They did airstrikes against the rebels. They supplied Assad with anti-aircraft guns and all the munitions they needed, and they saved Assad. And they made it a strategic failure for the United States, because the United States pursued the removal of Assad for 6 years before they abandoned it when it was clear that Assad wasn't going anywhere. If the United States goes to war with Iran, it's probable that Russia and China will do the same thing. And Iran is more powerful than Syria. Iran has a nuclear program, which means it has radioactive nuclear materials. And there is a mirror opposite situation happening in Ukraine, where Russia invaded Ukraine to denazify the government and to force regime change in Kiev. And the United States didn't declare war on Russia, but we sent Ukraine all our missiles, we sent all of our anti-aircraft, our tanks, our artillery, logistical support, everything short of intervening directly. Now, this is a make-or-break war for Russia. If Russia loses in Ukraine, it's over for them. They have to secure some kind of victory, and they can't back off. The same will be true in Iran. The United States will have to have a victory against the Iranian regime. And it will put Russia and China in the opposite position that we are in right now, where the United States, it may seem simple, but Iran is going into a mountainous country with difficult terrain and a massive army. And they've been armed with drones and with all the latest Russian equipment. They've got a peaceful But they've got a nuclear program, which means the possibility of dirty bombs. And if the United States goes into this very complicated and challenging war, it's conceivable that Russia and China will be supplying Iran while we're there, and supplying them with types of weapons that will make it a very costly and bloody and difficult war. And when you consider the fact that in terms of manufacturing, we are at a major disadvantage. Russia and China together produce far more artillery shells, bullets, tanks than the United States can make and will be able to make in at least a decade. We will be funding Ukraine and supplying Ukraine. We will be funding Taiwan and supplying Taiwan. At the same time, we'd be at war with Iran directly on behalf of Israel, while China and Russia are funneling weapons to them as a lifeline. Now, what's different about Iran versus Ukraine is that the United States would be stupid and arrogant and bold enough to say that if Russia and China supply Iran, then we would go and attack Russia and China. It's not an unrealistic scenario that the United States would wind up in a direct confrontation with Russia and China over this. Because let's say, just like Israel attacks the airport in Aleppo because they fear that Iran is supplying Hezbollah through Syria, so they say, we'll attack the supply lines, and that's a legitimate target. It's not inconceivable that the United States would attack a Russian or Chinese convoy to supply Iran. Then we're in a shooting war with Russia and China and Iran and the entire Muslim world. And that when people talk about a credible threat of World War III, this is what we're talking about. And the tripwire comes down to this militia. It's not even a government. The tripwire is this militia, Hezbollah in South Lebanon, which is dead set on destroying Israel. They got 100,000 missiles, 100,000 guys. They're run by Iran, which is saying if Israel kills civilians, we will sick them on you. And Israel blows up a hospital and kills 500 people. What do you think Israel's after here? What's the end game? It seems hard to argue that Israel is not trying to set off a tripwire that brings the United States into a global conflict in order to destroy Iran. That's what seems to be happening here to me. Why else would Israel do it? Like we said, when you look at the video, when you look at the level of destruction and what's been going on for the past week, it's just ridiculous to suggest that anyone other than Israel is responsible. Israel's blown up enough hospitals. This is exactly what they do. They say that the Palestinians are animals. Oh, but today they all come out and say, oh, we didn't blow up that hospital. We didn't blow up that hospital. 100 mosques, 100 schools, 100 ambulances, a convoy of 100 people fleeing. Well, we'll take credit for those. But that hospital, that was the Palestinians. Right? Doesn't even make any sense. And this is a precision munition. These JDAMs that some say were used here, this is a precision missile. So they didn't accidentally hit this hospital. And if they're going out and denying involvement, that means it wasn't an accident. They didn't say, oops. They denied. When really everybody knows they did it. And that would suggest that they did it deliberately. And they're going to ethnically cleanse Gaza. And they're going to knock out two birds with one stone, clear out Gaza, potentially clear out the West Bank, invite these Iranian militias onto the battlefield to give them an excuse to attack Iran, which forces Iran to retaliate, which then drags the United States kicking and screaming to defeat Iran, which finalizes their 40-year plan, their 40-year foreign policy to make the Middle East a mosaic of tribes and flags. The only one that remains is Iran. Just take a look at a map. Take a look at a map. You'll see it. Libya, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria. They've all been taken out. They've all either been neutralized or they've been taken out. And what remains is Iran. That's what they want more than anything. So this is a very This is a very bad situation because, again, the hospital being blown up is just the beginning. Israel's about to go in with tanks, artillery, planes. And their goal is not to stop in Gaza City. It's going to be a protracted, long counterinsurgency where there will be a lot of civilian casualties. And they'll always be able to say, we let everybody evacuate. And once everybody is forced south, then Israel's going to move south. And they're going to force the refugees all across the world. They're going to force the refugees into Egypt and America, presumably, everywhere else. And then the United States is going to become the lucky winner of a million Palestinians who blame us for ethnically cleansing them. Because we put our aircraft carrier there to make sure that it happened. It's just amazing. It's just, you know. And by the way, all of this could be avoided if the United States stands up to Israel. Israel is the pariah. Israel is the instigator here. And you see they have their proxies out here like Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin. They're intimating that if the United States doesn't support Israel, Israel will nuke all its enemies. And it's a nuclear blackmail. If that's the case, the United States should treat Israel like a rogue state. If Israel is telling the United States, support us in a world war and support our genocide or else we will nuke our opponents, then we should treat them like North Korea. We should treat Israel like Iran. We should treat Israel like one of these countries. And the United States should say, no, you're not nuking anybody. And no, you're not going to ethnically cleanse Palestine and alienate us from the whole Muslim world and drag us into war with Iran. But we can't. And we can't do that because how many American billionaires, how many critical security infrastructure and government officials and so on are tied up with Israel? If we said that to Israel, if we tried to stand up, how many of our American titans of industry, billionaires, Wall Street guys, how many people in the NSA, how many people that run big tech, would form a fifth column against the United States within our own borders? Just take a look at how many American billionaires contributed to Bibi Netanyahu's re-election. It's like all the American billionaires. Groups like ADL that can bankrupt Twitter, they and everybody that's on their Rolodex and everybody that was with Epstein and the Mossad and all these Jewish federations all of a sudden turn against the United States. Now do you see the problem? Here's a better question. If there is a rogue state that is blackmailing the United States with nuclear weapons so that we go and fight their war at the risk of a world war with Russia and China, and we can't do anything about it because of the infiltration of Jewish Zionists in our society, then how can America truly be sovereign if we have that level of subversion by Jewish Zionists in our society? That's the operative question in all of this. If Israel is a rogue state, that's what it is. When Israel is saying you have to fight our war at the risk of a nuclear apocalypse or else we'll nuke everybody anyway, you're a rogue state. That's what North Korea does. And that's Ben Shapiro is going and saying that. Ben Shapiro, an American conservative, is going out there and saying, here's what's going to happen. The United States is going to give Israel everything it needs or else Israel will nuke its neighbors. That's the behavior of a rogue state. If that was North Korea, we would put them under a sanctions regime. We would pursue shadow regime change. We would force the hand of some other superpower to deal with them. Here's the problem when it's Israel. Israel has so many loyalists, not just in America, but in America's elite class. It would be catastrophic. The United States is prohibited from designating or treating Israel like a rogue state for that reason. How can we be sovereign with that arrangement? How can America be independent? Now, maybe if it was some other country that doesn't matter, like Togo or, I don't know, Equatorial Guinea, maybe it'd be different if there were a lot of them in our elites. But this is a country that is now at the center of potentially World War III, and we can't do shit about it because of how many of them there are running stuff over here. And no one would feel any differently if you mirrored it with China or Russia. If we couldn't effectively fight China because so many people in the elite were Chinese and waved a Chinese flag and organized in Chinese federations and said anyone who opposes the domination of the elite by China is Sinophobic, people would understand the problem there. If it was all Russians, people would understand the problem. If you tuned into CNN today or last year and their coverage of the Russian war was dominated by ethnically Russian newscasters saying, oh, Russia's the victim. Oh, poor Russia. And the United States couldn't go to war with Russia because, hey, everyone in Google and everyone in big tech and everyone in the Wall Street is ethnically Russian, pro-Russia. We would see the problem. But people have let it fly with Israel because they say, well, Israel's our closest ally. We would never have a problem with them. They're our closest ally. We're Judeo-Christian. They're just like us. They're the 51st state. America and Israel have an identical national interest. There'd never be a conflict. So it would never be a problem that so many Zionist Jews are in power in America. What happens when it is a problem? What happens when there is a divergence with world-altering consequences? We're finding out. But that's the problem. I've been saying it for a long time, and nobody recognized that it was an issue until people start to see the true face of the Zionists over there, that they are massacring a nation of children, inflicting a collective punishment, and it seems like they're almost doing it on purpose so that America will go into a world war to defeat their regional adversary. And now people say, oh, damn, guess it was a bad idea to have all these Israel firsters everywhere as opposed to America firsters. If you had America first, president, media, billionaires, it wouldn't matter. America could pressure Israel just like America can pressure North Korea. North Korea's got a nuclear arsenal. They're not nuking anybody because we use China to constrain them. In this case, I don't know what we're going to do. We're a little bit screwed. So anyway, that's that. And this sets the stage for Biden's visit tomorrow. Biden was supposed to go there to secure humanitarian aid. And Biden was supposed to go and meet with Mahmoud Abbas and King Abdullah in Jordan. But that's not happening. That's off now. So Biden will be there in Israel to convince Netanyahu not to kill so many civilians. But I don't know how successful that's going to be. So tomorrow will be waiting to see how that meeting goes. And then after that, we're anxiously awaiting the ground invasion. But we're approaching a point of no return. It's that simple. There's going to come a time when there's no way to turn around. There's just going to be one direction. And people may not like it. They may want to or try to stop it, but they won't be able to. It will set something in motion that can't be stopped. We're reaching that point very soon. We're closer than you think. It may have happened today. It may have happened in the past. We don't know. We're approaching a point of no return where every country will be forced into a certain set of actions that is going to make de-escalation impossible. Because that's how that works. Israel blows up a hospital and then everybody riots and Hezbollah has to attack and Israel's going to do what they want. Iran has to respond. We have to go in. China and Russia have to support. We got to bomb them. You know, like this is a chain reaction that once it begins will not be able to stop. That's what we need to avoid here. But we have no power. We have no sovereignty. They have all the power. Now people are, and you know, and the thing is, it almost has to end this way because if it ends any other way, maybe people realize what a problem this is and they try to change it. Maybe this would be the wake-up call. So we're all being dragged to hell by Israel, but that's okay. We're going to move on. We're going to take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. Dark times. Very dark times. Did Israel bomb the hospital to force Hezbollah to retaliate? because they want us to go to war with Iran. I hope not, but it seems like that's what's playing out. So anyway, we'll take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. Let me get set up here. It's a tough situation. All right, let's see. Get my water too. And I'm hungry. I was fasting today. I was fasting and praying. Didn't get a chance to do the Twitter space, but I was fasting. I'm hungry. All I had the whole day was a hot dog. That's all I ate, one little hot dog and nothing, and a piece of cake and nothing else. So I'm starved. I need candy now. It's past midnight, so we can break the fast and we can feast.
Pretty underscore fly underscore white underscore guy sent $3. 255. Shapiro thinks that Hamas hiding behind civilians makes it morally acceptable to kill civilians.
Yeah, well, and that excuse is BS anyway. They say, oh, well, you know, they're human shields. It's like, so do you think you can kill an infinite number? That's basically what they're arguing. They're basically saying, well, you know, no matter how many civilians we kill, it's Hamas's fault because we're at war with Hamas. It doesn't really work that way, you know? Like, is there an upward limit to how many people that they can murder, like innocent people that had nothing to do with it that they can murder? And they could excuse it by saying, well, they were in the way. Like, if somebody takes a hostage, if you come home to a burglary and the burglar takes your kid hostage and puts a gun to his head, are you going to shoot your kid and the burglar and say, well, hey, the burglar did it. He took the kid hostage. No. So there's got to be some limit, but that's just it. They don't think these people are human. So for them, that's totally legit.
Zirkin sent $10. The worst part about bombing a hospital is there's nowhere to send the casualties.
Yeah, exactly. Big problem.
Gulam and Groiper sent $3. Born to marry hot tiger moms, forced to keep the white race alive.
That is so true. Tiger moms were made for us. I don't want to do that whole bit again, but you know, we have to save the white race, and yet the white women are all fat. What a cruel punishment. You know, God said you have to have white kids because your race is dying. So you have to get with these white women. And you go, oh, great. We're being commanded to get with white women. This is great. What could be better than this? We get commanded to go and chill with all these Aryan queens, and God said, hang on. You know, you're like, hey, what's the catch? God said, just one more thing. They're all fat. You know, God said, your race is dying. Your race is not having enough kids. You have got to go and have as many kids as possible. You're like, oh, gee whiz, what's the catch? We get to go to Hooters and light up all these bleach blondes. What's the catch? You know, God said, Come here closer. They're all fat bitches. They're all fat and they're all bitches. They're all really fucking annoying. It's like, damn! Worst directive ever. This is the worst commandment to have sex with white women ever. I thought this was going to be great. I thought we got the jackpot. But we were wrong. We got trolled. God trolled us. God said, what if God said, what if you wanted to get into heaven? You wanted to get into Hyperborea, but God said, they're all fat and annoying. What can you do? We were put here to suffer. Never forget that. Adam took a bite, and now we can't have tiger mom. It would be too good. It would be too good. You know, God would say, like, hey, you know, you got to have kids. And it's like, hey, look at these tiger moms. They're hot. They're smart. They're cooking. They're whipping up sushi in the kitchen. They age great. Can't have it. Can't have it. And the white women were hot, but then they all got fat. So that's what we, can't win. You can't win. All you could do is get nailed to a cross and suffer, metaphorically speaking. I don't mean to, that's actually too glib. I don't mean to in any way minimize the suffering on the cross. I mean to say that we're here to suffer is the point. We're here to suffer. We're here to toil. We're here to work and toil and die. And part of that is that we will have to marry women who either are going to start out fat or will get fat over time and divorce you. That's our punishment. You either have to marry a fat woman or you will marry a woman who is not fat at the time, but will get fat later. She will get fat later. And you will have to go to parties for the rest of your life. You will have to sell your cool car and buy a giant dump truck to stuff your fat wife into to bring to parties with your in-laws and watch your wife eat portion after portion, and you can't say a damn thing about it because she'll just take all your money. She'll take all your money and your kids. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Marry an Asian? No, your kids are going to look Chinese. Imagine Nick Fuentes Jr. walks in the room and he looks like totally Asian. Imagine there's like a boardroom meeting in the future and it's like, oh, all rise for the chair of the America First Foundation, Nicholas J. Fuentes Jr. And he walks in and he looks like Jackie Chan. Could you imagine such a thing? My dad was actually, I'm actually half white. My father was Italian and Mexican and Irish. But I got my mom's genes. You know, this is, so it's either that or it's the other. Or it's the other. You're stuffing your wife in a dump truck. And, you know, with the kids. Your kid's non-binary, your kid's trans, your wife's fat. What are you going to do? Your house is full of stupid shit. Your house is full of your wife's nonsense. What can you do? Anyway, not to blackpill you, but yeah, the Tiger Mom thing. Tiger Mom thing, yeah, that's our punishment. You thought it'd be easy? Think again.
King Louis IX grow hyper sent $5. This new guy on the block Autumn Grow Hyper has been spitting straight facts. Hess like the Derek Chauvin of Yeeting's icons, except Hess giving a breath of fresh air to the app not taking it away.
Nice, that's funny. Whoa!
A Drummond sent $1,000. We prayed for you at my church this morning, Nick. You have a worldwide army and I am so excited for what 2024 has in store for you, America, and the Christian movement. God bless.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for the huge super chat, man. I really appreciate it. God bless you. This guy is just like, man, he is supporting this. He is paying for this show. I hope you all know this is America First brought to you by A.T. Drummond because, you know, the $3 here and there, that's great and everything. But this guy's coming in and just like, this guy is like the Russia. He's the Iran. Or he's the Russia and the China to our Iran. If I'm Ahmadinejad, if I'm Ayatollah Khamenei, he is Russia. If I'm Assad, he's Russia. So thank you very much, man, for the huge super chat. And I really appreciate the prayers as well. Thank you. And tell your church thank you for praying for me. I wonder, do they know who I am? I can't imagine. You go to like a normal church. Pray for Nick Fuentes. People like Google him. People Google me after the Mass and they're like, who are we praying for? Are we praying for him to die? Like, why are we praying for neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic, white nationalist, who are we? Why are we praying for this guy? No, but hey, I appreciate that, and I hope you tell them thank you for me. It's true. 2024 is going to be a great year. I mean, with Rumble, with Twitter, with AFPAC 4 on the horizon, everything that's coming up, it's going to be a really big year, and we're going to do everything in our power to get Trump elected. So, big plans and projects. I'm giving it my all. I'm going all out just this once and then into hiding forever. No, I'll still be fighting, but this year is going to be a really important one. So, thank you very much, man. God bless you. I appreciate it.
Protestant grow I percent $50. Mmm, yummy fast break. Feel like Saul Goodman with no water since midnight.
Yeah, seriously, dude. I'm hungry. I need an almond joy. I need candy.
Nick Love sent $50.
I'm gonna be
Hi,
pissed.
Nick. New grow upper here. I would recommend everyone check out Classic Scroip on Twitter if you're new. He's a great resource. Love you, big guy. America first. Hail Christ. Hail Nick.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Love you, too. Yeah, he's a great... That's a great Twitter account. I appreciate it.
Spence sent $5. Thank you for always telling the truth.
Hey, you got it. You're welcome.
Jewish Handrub sent $3. For someone who claims to anti-social, you have a very interesting taste in music, like being a fan of Yi and Wu-Tang Clan, for example.
I don't know what one has to do with the other. You could be anti-social and appreciate good music. So, I don't know what the connection is.
Ari sent $3. What's annoying about being uncircumcised is sometimes your foreskin gets in the way when you piss and splits your stream into two different trajectories, like putting your thumb at the end of a hose.
Thanks.
Ari sent $3. Also, when you're done pissing, no matter how violently you shake, there is usually a few drops of urine that your foreskin carries like a pouch. It only gets released when you put your pants back on.
You do this to me? I'm a serious comment. How could you... Come in here talking about your penis hanging out. You're coming in here talking about your penis and urine coming out of it. This is just, hey, this is actually a serious show. This is like a serious show. You come in here talking about your penis and piss and foreskin. This is a serious show. Show a little respect. Quit coming in here talking about urine. This is a show about geopolitics and international relations. How dare you come in here, all right, with your fly undone and your penis hanging out, penis and balls, flopping and piss spraying everywhere. How dare you? What do you think this is, a urinal? This is a serious show! Punk-ass bitch.
John sent $3. I've been stacking beans on top of each other every day for years, and now I have a mountain of beans. Feeling pretty proud of myself. Should I shape it into a miniature replica of the Third Temple?
The Third Temple. Old Keith. The old Keith Woods and the Third Temple. Those bastards are trying to build a Third Temple over there. You know, I was watching this Keith Woods space. He's saying something about they're trying to build a Third Temple? What's that all about? Why are they making it out of poo? Third Temple? This is... Israel or India? A turd temple? What do you mean? Why would they build the temple to turds?
Wowfi sent $7. Andrew Anglin, a.k.a. the master article publisher of The Dissident Right, supports Palestine. We are so back. Gamers anyways, hope everyone has a nice day.
Of course he does. He's totally based. He knows what's up.
Phil sent $3. Wow, I'm impressed. You were only 2 hours late tonight. I'm proud of you, Nick.
I was.
Keep up the good
work. I was technically like 90 minutes late, okay?
Quack sent $3.
Relax.
We've been using the same shitty speakers in Halloween decorations for over 20 years. Quack.
Speakers? I don't know what you mean by speakers, but yeah, I mean, I don't do, my family hasn't done Halloween decorations since I was a kid, sadly.
Liam sent $5. Is it true that Jews are kicked out of 109 countries? What's the story about that? P.S. Love you, Nick, from Trashy New Zealand,
yeah,
LOL.
Jews have been expelled, not from 109 different countries, because there's doubles in there. Like, Jews have been expelled from multiple countries, or multiple times from the same country. I haven't scrutinized every entry on that list, but yeah, there's some meme out there that says that they've been expelled 109 times, where they literally say, hey, all the Jews got to leave.
Will sent $3. 2/7. So to continue from last week, I mentioned I ain't got a dollar because I work in the coal mines, but I got promoted to sales, so hopefully I'll be able to super chat more messages moving forward.
Great. Congrats on the promotion.
Jewish Handrub sent $3. If the migrants coming across the border are big booty Latinas, would mass migration still be bad? The plus side would be that they would look better than the native female population.
No, that's, dude, first of all, cringe. Look, Hispanic women, as much as I love them, I'm actually not super attracted to Hispanic women, but that's just like, I'm sorry, but their hair gets like frizzy and stuff, and like they all get fat. The worst kept secret about Hispanic women is they all get that like physique when they hit a certain age. They all get a little round. They all get that abuelita physique at a certain point in time. So yeah, let's just not go down that. That's just such a cringe. That's such a cringe forced meme, and I've never supported that. It's cringe as fuck.
Glad underscore Kath sent $3. My friend is Jewish, and growing up his parents taught him that they were the chosen people. These are your average, non-religious, non-political, suburban Jews. They all feel this way towards us.
Yeah, they felt this way for thousands of years.
Ari sent $3. I pray that Carlin can let go of her racial grievance against the Irish and her denial of the potato famine and unblock Keith Woods.
Is that what it is? She hates the Irish? I didn't know that she hates the Irish.
French Catholic sent $3. Recent events are interesting. Jews have screwed themselves over with the left by pushing this Marxist oppressor idea when the Goyim realizes that they are the oppressors in the Middle East.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Trollt sent $10. It's pretty impressive how Hamas and other Muslim military groups refuse to give up in the face of overwhelming odds.
Right.
Taliban members refuse to give up against the number one world superpower and ended up winning. Pretty inspiring. Never black pill.
You're right. That's actually a good point. Good to hear from you, Trollt. It's true, and I said it when the Taliban won. These are guys that are ready to die. And even Hamas, they say that they're born to die. Like, their greatest glory could be to die in the struggle. And, you know, I don't necessarily support this idea of, like, suicidal violence necessarily, but the idea of giving your life, the idea of not caring, that's what you got to take away from it. Not like I'm going to go put a bomb on myself and blow up. Don't do that. But you have to take that mindset of, I'm going to give my life to the struggle. I'm not going to care what happens to me. And for whatever reason, it's easier for people to wrap their heads around being a martyr in a battle. It's more difficult for someone to wrap their heads around going to work for 80 years and sacrificing their life that way, which is different. And it's not glamorous. Doesn't have all the glory, but that's what we need, is we need people that are prepared to make sacrifices for their entire life and to dedicate their life to the struggle, not necessarily in a blaze of glory in some horrible act of violence, but by slowly and methodically and carefully working to build a political alternative in the United States. And if the Taliban can give their life to a brutal insurgency, in the desert, then we should be able to dedicate our lives to this political battle in America, because it's worth it. If it's worth it for them to maintain control over this shitty desert land, then it should be worth it to us to defend our civilization and everything that comes with that. So it is inspirational, and there's a huge lesson in there.
Finance Bro sent $3. People should Google Britt Harris. He's a hardcore Christian and a big boy in the endowment/Bilderberg space. We won't have a hardcore Christian as high up in finance in a long time once he retires.
Way to dox him. Nice going.
French Catholic sent $3. It's truly astounding to see how easily the Jews can speak out both sides of their mouth. I feel like it's such an alien concept to a classical European or European descended person, this dishonesty.
Yeah, that's true.
Crab Goblin sent $3. Is it true that there exists a photo of you next to the McDonite figure in the Orlando McDonald's?
I think so, yeah.
Crab Goblin sent $3. Are you red-pilled on the human condition?
Yeah, thanks.
Crab Goblin sent $3. Are you red-pilled on time?
Yeah, I'm red-pilled on time.
Natsuk Greekoid sent $3. Carlin Borisenko saying you have a massive dick on her Twitter,
let's
BTW.
Just not, okay, gross, let's not go there.
Russ will send $10. So, Biden's border security package won't go under the radar after all. Michael McCall is going to bait Republicans with it, so Israel and Ukraine get $100 billion. Yikes.
Yep, yeah, we'll cover that this week.
John Dave Irving sent $109. Jehu, told by God to take North Kingdom of Israel, commit atrocities like throwing Jezebel out of a window, God vows to break the bow, Assyrians raid and take over the north. Lol, the counterfeits are pretty good at emulation.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar situation playing out. Thanks for the big super chat, John Dave Irving. Very true. And now it's just another repeat of that. Well, you know, these people, they lost God's favor a long time ago when they killed his son. You know, people tend to have a problem with that when you kill their child, especially when it's their only child and he's a guy. So I don't know how people say all the time, like, well, we got to bless Israel so that God blesses us. It's like, they killed his kid. Why would he do us any favors if we help, if we're accomplices to the murder of his only son? I don't know. What kind of father do you know that does that? Someone kills their kid and we're like giving them all this money. I think he would not like that. I would contend that he would not like that, actually. So anyway, thanks for the big super chat. I appreciate you.
Justin sent $3. Thank God you're here. So much misinformation. I only trust you for the truth.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, you know, I'm doing my best out here.
Nitro Respector sent $3. On a serious note, we really need to get all these Muslims out of the West. Seeing these massive Muslim protests in Europe and America honestly freaks me out.
First, we will have Christian power, then we could do that, okay?
Simon Skula sent $5.
First.
Seems like this could be the scenario. Hezbollah launches huge numbers of missiles to overwhelm and deplete Iron Dome and may even attack U.S. carrier group. Then Iran will launch long-range missiles.
Yeah, it's possible. And, you know, it's dubious if America could even win a war with Iran at this point, honestly. Because look at what's going on in Ukraine.
Simon Skula sent $5. Never thought we'd see the potential destruction of Israel in our lifetime. Wicked awesome. So cool.
Well, we're not. I don't think there's any chance Israel's going to be destroyed. If anything, they're going to be the last one standing.
Regular guy sent $3. Jewish bitch topping me off, call that Iron Dome.
Right.
John Andrews sent $3. Not a Muslim, but Islamic solidarity is based.
It'd be based if they were on our side, but they all hate us.
Simon Skula sent $3. What are odds of Saudi Arabia allying itself with Iran? Many people on Twitter talking about it, but seems very, very improbable given the history regardless of what's going on now.
Well, it was thought to be impossible, but every action that Israel does here is going to push them closer together. So, you know, it's really unpredictable. I thought it would never happen, and then in March they got together again, and then they had this phone call this past week, so who can say?
Based Cell sent $3. The Arab countries and Turkey who get their entire military from the U.S., whose entire economies are dependent on the West, will never rise up against Israel just because some Palestinians got killed. Based Cell sent $3. Muslim counties will never be friendly with America while Palestinians are getting murdered, but that's literally what's been happening for decades. At most, Israel's murder and turning to bricks will. Based
okay.
Cell sent $3. Make
chats.
Saudi a slightly less enthusiastic slave to the U.S. The lines of Zog and anti-Zog are already decided. Turkey brought weapons from Russia once. U.S. put sanctions on it. That was the last time ever.
Well, let's just see what happens, okay? You bet on that, and I'll bet on the alternative. I don't think anybody would have thought that Iran and Saudi Arabia would be having a phone call this past week. But here we are. So you're certainly right. It doesn't mean necessarily, look, I never said that Egypt and Saudi Arabia are going to war over this hospital, but if they ethnically cleanse Gaza, it'll be a different story. This is not what's been going on. If you think that's the case, you just haven't been paying attention. What they're building up to in Gaza has not happened. This is not what happened in 2014. This is not what happened in 2008. You're just wrong. What's going on right now is on the same scale as what happened in 1948. And look at the bad blood that engendered in the region. You're just wrong. So if Israel follows through with what everyone anticipates they're going to do, which is to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip and send all the Palestinians packing. And certainly they're not going to leave anything standing for these refugees to return to. You will see, it will alienate Saudi Arabia. It will alienate Egypt. You're wrong. If you think that these, if you think that our allies are not, oh, well, we supplied all their weapons. Yeah, and Germany and France are talking about strategic autonomy. Never say never. You think these relationships are set in stone? You fucking idiot. Egypt changed hands many times in just the last 10 years. And Egypt has changed hands between America and Russia several times in the last 70 years. So don't be so sure of yourself, pal. Yeah, I think this guy, like some know-it-all, like I don't know. Of course, Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia are dependent on the United States. That can all change very quickly. You know, that's like saying, oh, well, Poland's part of the Soviet Union. Poland's never going to be Poland, a part of America. Yeah, well, life comes at you fast. Ukraine joining NATO, that's never going to happen. Ukraine's been part of Russia for 500 years. Vietnam being allied with the United States, but they're at war. Yeah, we were fighting Vietnam 50 years ago. We were fighting Vietnam, and Soviet tanks were in Budapest, and, you know, then things change. Things change. That's the point. There's a diplomatic revolution going on, and it is reflecting the changing underlying economic reality of the world. China's rapid rise and the return of Russia and the simultaneous decline of the United States, these things have consequences. The United States will not have the same power projection that it had when it had most of the world's firepower and was the engine of the global economy 20 years ago. It's not true anymore. It's not true. So you're wrong about that. Don't be so sure. Well, Muslim countries will never be friendly while Palestinians are getting murdered. It's, again, we're talking about an ethnic cleansing. We're talking about something on the scale of what happened in 48, potentially. That's why I'm saying it depends on the outcome here. This is a wrinkle, and it may have scrapped the Saudi normalization talks, but it could get much worse depending on what happens here. And they're not going to be able to control it. If you don't understand the pressure that Saudi Arabia is under right now, you don't understand the Middle East. You don't understand the dynamics inside Saudi Arabia. We're not talking about a minor war in Gaza. We're talking about an ethnic cleansing. We're talking about a refugee crisis. We're talking about these Palestinians being forced into Egypt. These Muslims are going to revolt. So, and it couldn't have come at a worse time with these BRICS applications, which you mentioned. So, you know, a typical fucking Fox News talk radio education. Oh, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Yeah, never's a long time, pal. Never's a long time. So let's just see what happens. Let's bet.
Ari sent $3. Liz Wheeler is someone that looks decent from afar and exponentially worse as you get closer to her face.
Yeah, she's not looking so hot. I didn't even watch the video. She did a 35-minute video. I'm not watching that.
Hermetic underscore Growiper sent $3. Great show. How do you recommend Growipers go about driving change most efficiently? Jobs in the Senate
I've said this 100 times. Get involved in politics. If you can't figure it out, then don't.
Orlick sent $5. I'm reading from Zionists that the missile didn't completely destroy the hospital, which is unusual from Israeli strikes, therefore it wasn't Israel. They just false flag naturally.
It did. It devastated the hospital, though, so...
Justin sent $3. Damn. Jews should have no rights in any country they reside. Holla.
All right, chill. Holla! What up? I don't know if I go that far. Hey, let's say, you know, well, they can have rights and everything, but look, they can't be infiltrating everything like they are.
French Catholic sent $3. Excellent and insightful show today, Nick. You're one of the few people telling it like it is, and your geopolitical analysis is always interesting. Much love, buddy. Keep balling, playa.
Hey, thank 07. You. I appreciate it.
Russ will send $5. It's fun to watch governments around the world realizing that Israel is completely unresponsive to any and all requests to behave decently.
Yeah.
Boogly Woogly sent $7. The best thing about gate speaker ousting is that we don't have a speaker during this. Hopefully this lasts as long as possible.
Yeah, that's what's holding up a major aid package, but I'll probably jam it through.
Geralt sent $10. Hello, Mr. Pumpkin.
Hey.
Hadrian did nothing wrong sent $3. Fuck Israel.
Great.
Joey Bats sent $10. Liz Wheeler clip cracked me up. All these goofy neocons are forced to disavow you while a gun is pointed at them off camera. She must have said anti-Semite 10 times in 5 minute swim and just need to be banned from the internet.
Maybe I'll react to that on a stream or something. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow. I don't want to make a promise, but yeah, maybe I'll do that. That might be good content.
Stunky One sent $3. Great show. Nice pumpkin boss baby. Love you.
Thanks.
Farad Lukovic sent $20. 500 plus dead in a hospital. It's easy to lose perspective just what a massive loss of life that is. God bless the victims of this atrocity.
Yeah. It's a lot of people. And that's one strike. That's in addition to the nearly 3,000 that have already been killed in other airstrikes. It's a huge catastrophe.
Vialive sent $100. Long time no CO7.
Hey, thanks for the big super chat. I appreciate it, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Russell sent $10. Thank you for explaining such a complicated situation in a way that I can see and understand the depth of the conflict.
Hey, you're welcome.
John sent $3. America first. Europe second. Middle East last. Okay, maybe not last, but definitely not in our radar of priorities.
Nice. Totally true.
Liam sent $3. Hey, Nicholas, Liam again. Do you know much about New Zealand politics? My country is dog shit Lamau.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Chugger sent $10. If Hamas decided not to fight so they could live another day, Saudi Arabia and Israel would have neutralized their relations and they'd be screwed.
If Hamas decided not to fight... Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that was the thesis last week. Yeah, no, I talked about that all last week.
Russ will send $10. Kind of funny that this is labeled misinformation and hate speech.
Right? Can you believe that? Imagine that. They labeled something misinformation. Dr. Fauci, I think you're creating the disinformation. Am I right? Freaking libtard. I know. Imagine that. Whoa, they call this hate speech. Go figure. That's crazy. They call this hate speech?
Johnny Bravo sent
$3. What isn't that?
I hear people say that you hate people of color and Jews. Is this true? If not, why does Wikipedia labels you as such?
Why are you asking me this? You have been watching this show for years, so what's the point of this question, Koofus?
Josh the Remover sent $3. Nick, I already like far girls. You don't have to try to sell me on white women.
You meant fat girls, that's right.
Yankee Growiper sent $3. At the very least, we get more comically ridiculous Jewish lies out of this to red pill a few more normies.
Yeah, good point.
Farad Lukovic sent $100. Crazy how the Jews lying about the hospital bombing doesn't even crack the top 50 lies they told but would be a top 3 for any other race. We Jew.
Yeah, true. It's pretty, pretty outrageous lie, but that's their deal, you know? Thank you for the big super chat. You know, they're the masters of deception, Mossad. That's literally their slogan, is that they're built on deception. So, it's their specialty. But hey, big shout out. I appreciate it. Thank you for the big super chat.
Natsuk Greekoid sent $3. Is there really a clip of Patrick Casey doing the small waist big bank dance?
Funny.
I need it for my goon bank.
Funny,
okay,
funny.
Love you.
Funny.
French Catholic sent $3. What's the Russian and Chinese interest in opposing Israel? Is it just to get the U.S. presence away from the Middle East, or something else?
It's not that Russia and China necessarily oppose Israel. It's that they support Iran and Syria. And they support Iran and Syria because Iran and Syria buy weapons from Russia. Iran supplies petroleum for China. These are strategic allies of theirs, so... because, you know, Russia has a good relationship with Israel, actually, and so does China. But it's just that they tend to support some of Israel's opponents. That's the issue.
Pazios sent $3. Manliness is when you give yourself with trust completely to God. He who has manliness also has love, which God measures. Saint Pazios the Athenite.
Very true.
Line Rider sent $3. I like how, despite not being allowed to have a military base in Israel, on command the U.S. aircraft carriers will show up like a dirty dog that has to stay outside chained to a pole.
Yeah, right? Isn't that the best?
Farid Lukovic sent $20. Two silly questions, Nick. Can the U.S. president declare war on any country? Let's say Israel, for example. And can the U.S. cancel/revoke security guarantees?
Well, the president can't technically. The president has a timeline where he has to go to Congress for an official declaration of war, but there have been so many, like, for example, we intervened in Yemen. Well, there's no declaration of war on Yemen, but they use the authorization of use of military force in the global war on terror because they say that Al-Qaeda's in Yemen. So that's how we get to be there. So, you know, technically, we have to go to Congress to get a declaration of war. And there's a time, I don't know the specifics, but what is it? The president has 60 days. There's a window of time. The president can respond to an emergency, but needs to go to Congress for a declaration of war. And as far as security guarantees, it depends. I mean, some of these countries, we have a treaty with them, and so I think that has to go through Congress. I don't know what the architecture is with Israel if we have a specific treaty. But when I say we have to go to war to defend Israel, I mean, it's a given. You know, I don't know that we need a treaty for that because Israel wields the State Department, the Pentagon, the White House, regardless of what you draw up on paper. So as far as I'm aware, I don't think there's a treaty in place. So it depends on, you know, if it's NATO, that's one thing. If it's Israel, it's slightly different.
3x7010 Faw sent $10. Maybe Biden had the CIA blow up the hospital to remove Israel and therefore the GOP's prime election donors? If there was no Israel, the Jews would just back the DNC fully. No Israel, no GOP. No Israel, no more Ben Shapiro, remember?
Yeah, good point. Maybe they did.
Liam sent $3. Bring back Hitler 2.0. Eliminate these Jews once and for all.
Okay. Zieg. Disavow that. Let's chill.
Hermetic_growiper sent $3. When are you on Fresh and Fit again? Love seeing you spread the good news to the profane. Great analysis as always. Love you, big guy.
Thanks. I'll be on there the next time they invite me.
Based Mountaineer sent $5. I wonder if Iran has a Dalil option?
Maybe. Well, they don't have a nuclear arsenal, so it doesn't work that way. And we have one more here on Cozy. Milk Tea Groiper with a super chat. No message. Okay, that's our last super chat. I got to eat something, okay? I've been fasting all... The Pope said to fast. I haven't eaten all day. I'm hangry. I'm pissed off and I'm hungry. So I can't do a show. Listen, Papa, I can't do a show when I'm starving, okay? I need a dispensation because I have low blood sugar and I'm hungry. So that's going to do it for us. Thanks for watching. Remember to follow me here on Cozy and on Rumble. Follow me on both to get a push notification whenever I go live. Follow me on Telegram as well. Links are down below. I'm on the air Monday through Friday around 10 o'clock Central Time these days. As always, thanks to our super chatters. In particular, huge thanks to A.T. Drummond, Farid Lukovic, and John Dave Irving. As well as, I think there are a few more here, Vialive, and I think it's just them. So special thanks to those guys. Thanks to all our super chatters, everybody that watches the show. We love you, and I'll see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. It's going to be only America first. America first. The American people will come first once again. America.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. It's going to be only America first. America first. The American people will come first once again.